Good morning and welcome to another episode of Breakfast Theology. It's your hosts. What's the company that makes little delicious treats? Hostess. It's your hostesses.
Hostesses.
Josiah, Isaac, and Chuck. And you guys say hi to the people listening.
Hi, everybody.
What's up? I didn't want to say hi. I went against your command.
No, you just did.
Rebellious nature.
Joke's on you. I wanted you to do that. Anyway, we are continuing our series in James. We're going to be talking about chapter 4 this morning.
Awesome.
And hopefully you weren't too distracted by the mention of hostess treats, because I know that I was a little bit. This morning I had waffles and chicken. Chicken and waffles. It's just, I love chicken tenders. They're like one of my go-to favorite foods. That's how I usually judge restaurants, is because if you do chicken tenders well, you're probably doing other things well. And you can tell when people don't care about their chicken tenders. And I'm not going to say this too loud. Let me whisper.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
IHOP doesn't have the best chicken tenders I've ever tasted. They're like a 5 out of 10. Like,
oh, that's pretty average.
Average chicken tenders. Okay.
What do you have?
Yeah, I had, jeez.
Southwest.
Yes.
You had the Southwest.
I had all the Southwest. That was an expensive purchase. I had the Southwest chicken bowl with a side of pancakes. It's pretty good.
And I had eggs, bacon, taters, and toast.
I had a fun fact I wanted to share, if that's all right. And nothing to do with anything. I learned the other day that flying squirrels have some form of bioluminescence. And like their abdominal area can like glow pink at night.
Fly in the moonlight.
Oh yeah.
It's just shining through.
I feel like that's a biological disadvantage, because like there's like an owl and they're like, oh, where are those flying squirrels? I love eating those things. Oh yeah, there's one. Boom.
It's supposed to help them like navigate, like stick with one another and help them get home and stuff like that. But I just found it interesting that a mammal glow in the dark.
Are there any other mammals that you think of with bioluminescence?
No. No, I do not know any. So I at least wanted to share that with the Breakfast Theology crowd, because I thought that was pretty interesting.
I searched mammals with bioluminescence, and literally the first sentence is, a species of frog has bioluminescence. I'm like, Google, did you not hear the word mammal?
He did not understand the assignment.
Anyway.
Did you read about the white black bear?
What?
Hmm? Like white black bear.
Was it albino?
I guess you could call it that if you don't mind offending a bear. But no, it is a genetic mutation.
Yeah.
It is actually a black bear, but it's white or blonde.
Huh.
They spotted one in the Upper Peninsula. Mostly they're found off of the coast of Canada in the Northwest on an island. And they're saying that the gene pool on that island is so restricted, that's why they have more white black bears.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. These they captured on trail cameras in the UP.
Yeah.
Maybe they're bear ghosts.
Oh.
Well, the Indians call them spirit bears.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, that's not quite right. Okay.
So you can cut all that out, right?
Oh, no. That's what the people
that's,
come to hear.
That's valuable content right there.
That's how we make all of our money, stuff like that. The heading on James chapter 4 I start with is things to avoid is what the NASB titles it with. What is warnings against
Against worldliness is the English Standard Version.
Does yours
title.
Have a title?
Pride promotes strife.
Ooh. Juicy.
That sounds true.
Sounds drama. Sounds like
it does.
Sounds, yeah, like there's going to be some problems here. So let's go start reading and see what we got.
All right.
What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is not the source your pleasure that wages pleasures, excuse me, that wage war in your members? You lust and do not have, so you commit murder. You are envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, so that you may spend it on your own pleasures.
Amen.
I think it's just a very insightful look into human nature.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's just cuts so powerfully, and it cuts right to the heart of so many problems.
Like, why do you have problems? It's because you're humans. Because there's something inside of you.
Hmm.
A desire that is pushing out of you more important than
what's important.
Than what's important, yeah.
You know, you're counting your wants and needs and passions to fulfill and satisfy more significant than another's.
Yeah. You were just talking about Philippians 2.
Mm-hmm.
We ought to think about others more than we think about ourselves.
Right.
You didn't miss a part of the conversation. That was while we were eating before we started recording.
Yeah, that was pre-recording conversation.
You're not senile. You're not missing anything.
Oh, boy.
But yeah, you're right that we should be putting others above ourselves. Not that we should lower our self-esteem or see ourselves as, you know, less human or less valuable for some reason like that, but
so that would be a good sermon topic for you. Mm-hmm. What's the Bible say about self-esteem?
Yeah. Mm.
Right here, I think we're talking about it.
Mm.
You don't get what you want, but what do you have to resort to? You have to resort to war and murder.
Yep, conflict and violence.
I feel like verse 2 may have been written with like David in mind. You know, with Bathsheba, like you lust and you don't have, so what do? You commit murder to get what you want.
Or
I really thought of Cain and Abel.
Ahab
and Jezebel with the guy at the vineyard. He wanted the vineyard and threw a temper tantrum, and so his wife Jezebel has a man murdered in cold blood for it.
Yeah.
I got good news.
Oh, what's his name? I just read it a few weeks ago.
Can I help you? I'm not sure what you're thinking.
Nathan?
Yeah.
I think his name is Nathan.
Hmm.
Anyway. He died, and now he got his vineyard.
You know, you might be reading this passage, if you are reading it along with us. You might think to yourself, I mean, I do have desires in me, and maybe it causes tensions and problems, but, like, I've never murdered anyone.
Or Naboth.
Like,
sorry. Oh. Naboth, not Nathan.
Right.
What?
Mm-hmm.
What definition of murder are you using?
Right.
Well, that's first degree, second degree, or third degree.
You know, like this is. Some people might think extreme language, but you know, maybe we can think about the words of Jesus, where it says, "I say to you, you shall not murder, but I say to you, if you have hatred in your heart towards your brother, you've killed him in your heart."
That's
you know?
Right.
Think. The biblical idea of murder is more than just the physical act of the killing, but it's also the human desire in us. Yeah, thinking about it. The human desire to want to eliminate someone else for our own self-gain.
Mm-hmm.
In some way, shape, or form, to bring about death.
Has been the universal way of getting what you wanted, at least temporarily.
Yeah. Human nature sadly has resorted a lot to, if there's conflict, get rid of it.
fight completely.
Yeah.
And,
which has perpetuated conflict, ironically.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has.
Let's keep reading. Yeah. Verse 4.
I go and read it. You adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world is an enmity with God?
Also, that's just like a harsh sentence. Mm. Like,
can you read that in church?
It's a hard accusation to say you're an adulterer. You adulteresses.
Yeah.
Like, you fornicators, you absolutely messed up people.
You covenant betrayers.
It's like when Paul writes, you foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you? You know, it's like, who is playing tricks on you? Like, how are you so wrong?
Right. Or I think of, like, the letter of Galatians. I was thinking about this recently. I had, listening to a podcast, I brought it up. You know, Paul, with all of his letters, typically has the format of saying, like, you know, thanks and grace to you and stuff like that. But with Galatians, he just, like, starts right off with, hey, this is Paul. And by the way, I am shocked about how much you've been, like, misled. It's just...
I am absolutely shook right now.
Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, so that is a very, very strong statement.
Let's just start over in verse 4.
Yeah.
Keep going from there, that way you got it.
Makes me
think
of Hosea and Gomer as well.
Oh, yeah.
This.
Yeah.
You adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you suppose it is to no purpose that the scripture says he yearns jealously over the spirit that he has made to dwell in us? But he gives more grace. Therefore, it says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. How far are you going to read?
I think that's good for now, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I like, you were going to say something when he brought up enmity towards God.
Oh,
I was going to say, sorry. What does that mean? And then he went on to define it.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't realize you were about to say something.
No.
An enemy of God. Yeah, hostility. Mm-hmm. Some
where everything is,
some opposition.
Yeah, separation.
The opposite of friendship.
Yeah.
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 It's a word we don't normally use, like, in our daily life. I don't use the word enmity a lot.
Imagine if you had 20 mosquitoes on you. That is what enmity feels like towards mosquitoes.
So yeah, enmity is what you feel towards mosquitoes on a daily basis.
Mm.
Well, yes.
At least during the summer. I don't know if you know this, but the mosquito population in this area of Michigan dropped by 90% this summer because of the weird weather patterns.
Nice.
They didn't have the right conditions to have their eggs.
Take that, mosquitoes.
Go to maturity, so I got the least amount of mosquito bites I've had in a long time.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice.
It makes me wonder, like, what is the ecosystem really missing without mosquitoes? I'm sure some animals, like bats or something, need them around to eat or something, but anyway.
Yeah, so there's like this two-sidedness that happens here. You can't be in both camps. You can't be a friend of God and still make friends in relation with the ways of the world.
No matter what you think.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You're going to pull something over on God?
Hmm.
And it might sound like to you, well, isn't God kind of petty then? Or is he not big enough that he can share his affection?
Mm.
You know, some people can like see it as a lesser quality. Mm. You know, that God is so jealous and that he desires us so much, but it's only because he's holy and that he's unique. He's the perfect thing and
the only source of life.
It's like a wife is like, oh yeah, you can share quality time with me and your cocaine. That's fine. You know, like...
I was just
just like, why would he condone you doing something that's destructive and harmful and ultimately is for your destruction?
Or use that same imagery. Would it be okay for the spouse to be like, oh yeah, you can have another significant other too. Spend some time with them.
Yeah.
Like, we would all go, no, you can't.
Yeah.
You know?
If...
No, you can't.
I use this as a sermon illustration. If
the guy's wife was cheating on him and he didn't care, what would that say about their relationship?
Mm.
How unhealthy would that be? What problems does that point to?
Right.
You know? But God is jealous for us.
Yeah.
And he wants us to live for him.
That biblical, by the way, kind of the biblical look into the word jealousy, especially like in the Hebrew Bible and the Old Testament, has a connotation not just of what we imagine it to mean today, because most of the time when we think about it today, it's almost like a negative connotation, like you're distrusting or, you know, covetous towards someone else or something. But it really meant very passionate. Apparently the Hebrew word, I'm not super educated on it, but I've heard before that the Hebrew word for jealousy has a similar kind of imagery as like water boiling and bubbling over, just like a lot of passion. Which also turns into form biblically as well of God being very passionate and jealous.
Right. For us. It's not like a feeling of trying to. It's not a feeling that results from being unable to do something about a situation. Mm. You know, it's not like he's weak and unable to do anything, therefore he's jealous.
Yeah, or like distrusting.
He's just so passionate for his people.
Right.
Yeah. Like, our jealousy comes from the lack of knowledge, the lack of security, our own self-esteem issues, you know, those kinds of things. But that's not the case with God's jealousy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then verse 6 is kind of terrifying. There's an ultimate being up there who has the power to create the universe and literally do anything.
Right.
And that God can stand in direct opposition to you.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second.
Mm.
God is opposed to the proud.
You don't want that enemy.
No. I've used that with the parable Jesus gave about the man building a tower, sitting down first, seeing if he can finish it, or the king going against another king with so many soldiers.
Right.
And I said, use that idea with God.
Mm.
Do you think that you could go to war with God and win?
Mm.
No.
Yeah.
And you better make peace with
him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes me think too, the words of Jesus. He's like, hey, if you want to choose an enemy to have in this life, don't fear man. They can, like, at worst kill you for a little bit of time.
Right.
But fear God, who can destroy both body and soul.
I'll tell you who to fear.
Right, if you're going to have an enemy, having mankind as your enemy, it's a far better opponent than God.
If you're going to take into consideration someone's opinion and what they want you to do, it should be this guy.
Yeah. For sure.
But then also, this awesome and powerful God gives grace to the humble.
Yeah.
Which is something he doesn't have to do. That's the whole point of grace. Which is pretty incredible. Once again, to think that this ultimate being, God, is willing to extend some kind of forgiveness, patience with us.
Favor.
Yeah.
And favor.
Yeah. Despite us.
Yeah.
I think with all of this, it kind of makes the same, verse 7 is about to make the same conclusion we were just making. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. You know, hey.
8, 2.
Yeah. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. As we said, you know, if you're going to pick an enemy, pick the right one. Submit to the right power.
Fearing God doesn't make him an enemy.
Yeah.
Right.
We don't want to get that confused.
No, no.
Yeah.
Reminds me of Elijah's words on Mount Carmel. How long are you going to waver between two opinions? If God is real, worship him. If the Baals are real, worship them.
Mm-hmm.
Just make up your minds and be consistent.
Right.
Like, at least that's better than wishy-washy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as Jesus says, it's better to be hot and cold, but what use does lukewarm water have? Right.
You know, it's even worse. Not, I think in that situation, he's saying the hot water and the cold water are both useful.
Yeah.
So he's not saying, like, the hot and cold are, like, two different opinions you have to choose between. But, like, the lukewarm water, the mixing of the two, mm-hmm. is when they lose all their benefit. It's
right.
no longer hot and refreshing, and the cold water is no longer cold and refreshing in its own way, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, the same way here is that make up your mind. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. That's what it means to purify your heart, is to be focused.
And David prayed, I don't know, remember which psalm, but he said, unite my heart so that I don't sin against you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he starts off in verse 1 by saying, what causes you to sin? It's the desires that are waging war within you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, your heart is divided.
It's not everybody around you.
Yeah.
It's you.
That's right.
It's me, it's you listening, and it's all of us.
You have two little battle camps in you that are fighting for territory.
Yeah.
You can decide that fight.
Who you backing.
Yeah, who you backing. Mm-hmm. Which wolf are you feeding, you know?
Yeah. Isn't that a Native American story proverb?
He brought it up like a few weeks ago.
That's
like,
right.
He's like, you guys know the story of the wolves? And we both stared at him blankly. And we're like, what are you talking about?
That's right. I remember that now. Yeah. Well, let's keep going. Starting at verse 9.
It's interesting how it starts. I just read the first word.
Be wretched and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves before the Lord and he will exalt you.
Blessed are those who mourn.
Mm. Do you think this is talking about our attitude towards our sin? Because that's what makes most sense to me.
I think he's calling them to realize the state that they're in.
And the grief.
And to legitimately grieve over it. Because when that happens, you admit of the problem of one in the past.
There is a godly sorrow that leads to repentance.
Yeah.
And an earthly sorrow that leads to death.
Right.
I think that's what the verse says.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, in the Beatitudes, I don't think Jesus is just talking about people who've lost their parents or their spouse or children.
Right.
Mourning.
Right.
I think they're going to be mourning just over the way life is right now. You know, how it's not in God's ideal will.
Yeah. I've seen comments on Facebook made by people that I had sort of respected that made me take that away. You know?
Like they lost your respect because of how they
communicated
about themselves or what they think.
Yep. Mm.
It's a shame when that happens.
And I think verse 6 is tied directly to verse 10. Is that there is this pride within us that stands in opposition to God. And when we are proud, we justify whatever we do.
Mm. Yep.
Because we are, in some sense, our ultimate authority.
Right.
What we think is correct.
Mm-hmm.
So we say, because I'm so good, or because I got so much going for me,
right.
or because I'm so nice and whatever, and I have all these plans and all these things are happening.
And all these intentions.
They make sense.
Mm.
And they're okay. But when you look at verse 9 and 10, and we humble ourselves and we go, oh, you know, maybe God does know something.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put ourselves at his feet. I think the natural reaction is, oh, yeah, we are broken. Look at my sin. Look how bad it is. And that causes us that grief.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when we do that, we're willing to bow and stoop. That's when God is saying, you'll understand. Let me lift you up.
Right.
Let me show you the good things.
Right.
Like on the Antique Roadshow.
I haven't watched that in a long time. But
that was a throwback.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got this prized possession that's just the best thing in the world to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you let one of the experts, and he gets his pen out and he starts, well, there's some damage here.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't right.
Right.
I was watching this show similar to that called Treasures or something like that. And this guy had this really weird looking disc with like these weird symbols on it, and they thought it was like Mesopotamian, and he found it like in the ground in the U.S.
Yeah.
And like, if this is here, this could be evidence that like people were here a long time ago from a different part of the world.
Right.
And, like, it'd be a big deal. And the guys, like the experts, came out and looked at it. They're like, "Yeah, we've never seen anything like this. Like, let us go back and do some research." And they came back like a couple of days later. Like, okay. They brought up this old box of Porsche shoe sets from like the 1950s, and one of like the pegs that sit in the ground to hold the post had this on it, this design. So it was just like,
yeah,
essentially like a useless item from like like an old yard game. You know, and this guy is like, "Well, it's still cool." It's essentially worth nothing.
It's still cool.
And it said "Made in America" right on the back of it. But the part that was at kind of like got worn off and stuff, so you didn't see that. But like, when you knew where to look, you could see, oh yeah,
yeah,
it's right there.
Yeah, that is funny. That is funny. Yeah.
So I think that's the way we need to look at ourselves.
Mm. Here's the
damage. Am I as good as I think I am?
Yeah.
What was my last conversation with Josiah? Was it loving and encouraging and uplifting? Or did I try to cut him down, put him in his place?
Mm.
It's not my place to put him in
his
place.
This is an admission, just for everybody listening. Chuck is very mean to me all the time.
Yeah. And you ain't seen nothing yet.
And that's another thing to understand with human behavior is, we have two methods typically of trying to exalt ourselves, and that's either to put ourselves in a higher pedestal than everyone else, or to lower everyone else's pedestal and make ourselves the highest.
It does the same thing. It
does the same thing.
Just everybody on crutches kicking each other's crutches out from under them.
Well, Paul's got a good line in Galatians. He said, if you bite and devour one another, you're going to get bit and devoured.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So don't get into that game.
Yeah.
Because there's not going to be a winner.
Yeah.
Yep.
So he has some other, like, he goes along with these thoughts here. It's more like practical wisdom along with this. Do not speak evil against one another, brothers. Again, talking like, don't bite or devour, because it'll happen again. This is a way that we can, quote unquote, bite or devour. Just speak evil against one another. The one who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is only one lawgiver and judge, he who is able to save and to destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor? Talking about the humbling.
Yeah.
Right? We don't get to be the judge.
Self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who said it, but the unexamined life isn't worth living.
I think it's I think that was an ancient Greek philosopher, perhaps.
Socrates.
It's just, yeah, we'll just throw it out.
Maybe Aristotle.
Aristotle. Plato, I don't know.
Plato.
I had Plato.
Yeah, I find this interesting. He makes this category that, if you try to speak evil and have judgment, which I think more we can think of as like condemnation against someone else, then we put ourselves in a position as if we are the judge of the law, no longer like doers of the law. Which, I don't know, I find that to be an interesting concept, to think that if you're the judge, you're no longer a doer of the law. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I think what he's saying here is, if you are sitting in a position in this kind of way, you are saying that you are above the law in a sense. Like, therefore, you are not submitting yourself to it.
I see.
Like, a judge in our society interprets law,
but right,
obviously still needs to live by the laws.
Right.
But I think the guy in this situation, hypothetically, would be saying, you know what? With that pride thing, like, what I see is correct. therefore I'm not submitting to the boundary here. I'm above it and you are below it. Mm. And you are doing these things wrong and poorly. And James was saying, if you're doing that, then that's what makes you a judge of the law. Mm. You know, you're saying that you're too good for what God has laid out.
Right.
While also trying to hold others accountable to it, which is just nonsense.
Right. And he says, by the way, there's only one person that can do that, and you're not him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
One lawgiver who is able to save and destroy. Mm. I think we just talked about that with Jesus.
Yeah.
There's one to fear. I'll tell you who it is.
Yeah.
The one that can not only destroy your soul or kill your body, but destroy your soul in hell.
Yeah.
That's the one to fear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Destruction that nothing's going to bring you back from.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's just one more, like, I think, train of thought and passage here. The title of it for me is Boasting About Tomorrow.
Yeah.
It says, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin.
Whoa. Reminds me of Ecclesiastes. The word for vanity is that word for vapor. It's just like like you try to grasp onto it and it just...
Yeah. Yeah.
You are just like a vapor that appears for a little while and vanishes away like a breath.
Mm-hmm.
You ever see a tea kettle boil? The steam coming out of it?
Yeah.
That's a vapor.
Yeah.
How long does it last?
Not very long. It lasts maybe like a foot outside a teapot and then you don't see it anymore.
Technically, you can't see steam. You're actually seeing the condensation of steam.
Oh, that's a good point.
The steam is just that little bit right at the top of the tea kettle coming out right before the cloud starts. That's what the steam is. So like steam burns are like where you're like coming out of like right next to a really hot pipe and that hasn't like condensed yet and turned into water vapor in the air and it still lasts. That's when it's like it can be really, really hot.
Right.
So like it's even
212 degrees.
Your example is even more true because steam is just that little bit off the tea kettle.
Yeah.
And then there's that extra little vapor and then that's just gone. You know?
Yeah. In fact, steam, you know, you can't even see it.
Yeah.
And see it. Yeah. We've talked about in our Christianese series a while
Christian
back.
Christians say what?
Or Christians say what? You know, we talk about the Lord willing phrase, and
yeah,
this definitely, I think, was one of the main passages where people think about that for decent reason. And he's making the point of don't just expect that you have control over your life and that you can make total plans and they come out exactly as you think. That's just, you're not in that position.
Mm-hmm.
You're limited. There is one who's not limited, and you should rely on his plans.
No matter how many fortune cookies you buy.
Yeah. Yeah. The very last couple verses, I think, is another fascinating point. You know, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. I find the last one particularly interesting, too. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him, it is sin. I've been, you know, studying this concept a bit more, but correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe in, like, Christian culture, we might have an assumption that sin is, like, sin for everybody. Maybe it's not the best way to say it, but, like, there's the same set of do's and don'ts that are going to be sinful or righteous, and everyone falls under that same umbrella. But I think we learned that through Scripture that some people are going to need certain boundaries or certain ways of life or have a certain mindset about something. And if they go against that in the effort of honoring God, it can be considered a sin for them. Like with Romans 14, you know, there can be one who
doesn't eat meat and only eats vegetables and doesn't in the honor of God, and one who eats everything and doesn't in honor of God. But if the one that doesn't eat vegetables gets a stumbling block and then eats meat and is conscious, he's going against God in his mind, and it's considered sin for him. I think there's a similar message being said in verse 17. I think it's just interesting to think about that sin can, the same core principle of sin is for everyone, but its mask and how it looks or how it can be played out in people's lives can vary a little bit. You know? What is sinful for you?
I think that's why there were different sacrifices in the Old Testament, because God realized there are different ways to sin. Like, there's things that you did on purpose, there's things that you did by accident, there's things you forgot to do, you know?
Yeah.
There are all different kinds of ways, and then there's like that general category, like, for all the things that I don't even know about that I did wrong.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So yeah, when our conscience is held guilty for what we have failed to do or what we have done, that's an indication of sin.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is how I think God uses his spirit in us.
Yeah.
To allow us to pursue holiness.
Yeah.
So it's not bad to feel guilty. It's an opportunity to do something different.
It's bad to remain and live in guilt.
Yeah.
You get comfortable in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a good place to be for sure.
Right.
That's when it eats away at you and
destroys
your life.
Right. Right. Almost like, I find it fascinating that people can take like snake venom and poison and make like medicines out of it. Like little amounts can be maybe helpful at times, but obviously taking too much is deadly. Perhaps like these very strong emotions can have a similar principle of they have their time and place that can be helpful, but you certainly can't take too much of it or live in it because it can be decaying if you do.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
You know?
Very good point. So for this morning's voting, the good points go to
Isaac has the max score of 1.
Happens every once in a while.
I do want to encourage you guys, as we're in the midst of this, we're actually as we're wrapping up here, to reach out to us at breakfasttheology@gmail.com. Write us a comment. Let us know what you're thinking. Ideas you may have for episodes.
Just ask a question.
Ask a question, yeah. Stuff like that. I really want to thank you guys for listening to the podcast. It means a lot. We are right around 3,500 playthroughs, which we have a really consistent base of about 20 to 30 people who listen every episode, which is just awesome. So thank you guys, and share it with your friends.
But we don't know who they are.
Yeah, that's true.
We know some of them.
We do know some of them, but write in so that we know who's listening. All right.
We'll try to keep Josiah from making fun of you.
In a couple weeks, we'll be going over chapter 5. But until then, we'll see you next time.
See you then.
Goodbye.